it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Loud and Local continues on The Rock with Kevin Deers, 99.9 KISW.
Hey, what's going on? It's Loud and Local. Right now, I'm speaking with a Seattle legend, Kerry Ockery, vocalist for bands like Hammerbox, Goodness, The Rockfords, which is finally seeing the light of day again, with Mike McCready from Pearl Jam. She has three solo albums, and she's working on new music. She has a showcase coming up August 21st after the summer. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, Kerry?
I'm doing really good. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great to chat with you. You know, I collect old school cassette tapes. My friend John, probably know John Pettibone, singer of Undertow.
Yeah.
He works at El Corazon. He gave me a bunch of old Hammerbox cassettes. So
really?
Yeah.
Ooh, I might want to get my hands on one.
What if I were to sell back the... No, I'm just kidding. That would be... I think I would have to give it to you. Anyways, so how are you doing today?
I'm doing really good. Yeah. I mean, it's not raining. I feel good about that. Yeah. Here in the Northwest. No, things are doing good. You know, music continues on, albeit differently. I'm just at a different, you know, place in life. But, you know, that's something that's always going to be in my life.
Yeah.
And having been here for such a long time, there's just a great community too. So like, I'm still finding new people that I'm collaborating with. And that's something I really love. Every solo record I've done is like a whole new band, new producer, except for Steve Fisk. He did the last two. And that's just something I like to do. I like to find new players all the time. Love it.
Is that something that, you know, you seek out, or do they seek you out because, you know, you're so well known in this music community?
No, usually I seek it out. Okay. I seek it out for sure. Yeah. I've never been someone who hesitates, you know. I just think, and I like to take a risk and chance on people. I think more often than not, when I say, hey, do you want to play on the record? People are like, what? Really? And I'm like, yeah, you're really good. And I'm not controlling on a record. I just like, it's almost like cooking. I like to bring together really good talent and flavors, hand them songs, and then I'm like, go do something with that.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, I have my limits, and I'm clear about them, or things I don't like. You know what I mean? Sure. It's very few, but over the years, I've learned you have to step up and say what you like or don't like. It's your work and all of that. So, So I'll have a list of things that I'm like, no pedal steel. We're not going all country. You know what I mean? Don't even put on the wah-wah pedal. If I hear a wah-wah pedal, I'll, you know, like across the room, I'll be like, no.
You know, so one of these days we could have like a This Is Your Life segment where it's all musicians that have worked with you in the past through all your different bands, or just like a birthday party, you know, with all musicians that have worked with you. And then in the end, it would be a greatest hits, and you would just play. You would have to remember. You wouldn't be given the lyrics to anything. You would have to, on the spot, have to remember the different songs. And
that would be amazing. Actually, that would be amazing. I also think it would be a really fun night.
Yes.
I know.
Sounds
people.
Like a lot of planning. Good time.
Yeah. I've done kind of forms of that. Ben London a year or so ago put together a retrospective show for me, and it was Hammerbox songs, Goodness, solo stuff. I don't think we did a Rockford song, but like Harris came and played on the Hammerbox stuff. Danny and Chris came up and played some of the goodness stuff. And it just was a host of amazing musicians that night.
That's cool.
It was really fun. Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah. So let's talk about this Rockford. So that was something that was put out in, what was it, 1995? 2000. Okay.
Yeah.
And it was originally released, but it wasn't like a widely distributed album, or was it?
I don't think it was. I mean, it's something that Epic put out, but they didn't put like the full force behind it. And you know, Mike's in Pearl Jam, so they're very busy and they take priority. And so I think any side band that they have going on, you know, it's never going to be as big as Pearl Jam.
But they'll let them have fun and be like, all right, yeah, we'll put it out, but we're not going to give the full promotional push. Just, you know, have fun with it on the side, Mike.
Exactly. Well, and Mike's really creative. I think Mike's always seeking new things to do and interested in art. And at the time, he wanted to get back together with his Shadow Brothers. Yep. And initially, it was going to be a record with different singers all over it. And in fact, one of the songs Nancy Wilson sings on, awesome, or is the lead singer for that. Yeah. But then they asked me to come in, and then it was like, sing one song. Okay, sing this other song. All right, sing, you know, all of a sudden it was like,
now you're the singer.
I'm the singer now. Yeah. And Mike was really flattering. Mike was like, really, I just wanted to work with you. And I was like, deeply flattered. Yeah.
This was actually all just a ruse. We wanted you as the vocalist the whole time.
Kinda. It felt like that. I was like, all you had to do was ask.
Right. I'm right here. So where in Seattle do you live?
I live in Tacoma.
Oh, cool. Nice. Right on.
T-Town. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. We moved here in 2015. I mean, for the obvious reasons of Seattle becoming so expensive.
Now Tacoma's getting expensive.
Now Tacoma's getting expensive. I know. And it felt like we better do it right now or we're going to miss it. Right. Because it was the only city in the area that was still, you know, had prices that were under reasonable. Everything else was like $500,000 or, you know, whatever, all the way to Tacoma. And then it was like, all right.
And now 7 years later, your house is triple its value.
It has. Yeah. That's not a joke.
We're here on Financial Real Estate Talk with Carrie Ockery.
That's right. Yep.
So
here's what you do.
Nice. You moved to Tacoma. Okay. So if you don't mind, I'm curious about when did you first, or actually, let me ask, were you born and raised in Seattle?
No, I grew up in the Tri-Cities in Kennewick, Kennewick, Washington. Yeah.
And then when did you move to Seattle?
I came over in 85 and I came over and was going to the UW.
Oh, cool.
And then about 2 years in, things I was interested in was like photography at the time, but also French. I don't know. I'd always been fascinated.
Sure.
And second year into college, I did a study abroad for like a quarter and then just stayed in France for like a year in order to learn how to speak French. And I just knew, I'm like, I'm not a good student. I was like, I'm going to need to be forced, you know? So I'm just going to get a job. Everyone will leave. It's going to be terrible for a little bit. And then I'll know how to speak it. And so when I got back from that, and that's one of the hardest things I've ever done. I have such a deep appreciation for anyone who comes to a country and doesn't know the language.
Sure.
Like I have a very deep appreciation for that. But when I came back, I was like, okay, that's probably the hardest thing you've ever done. Since you've done that, what else do you want to do? And you know, I'd always been in choir. I'd never been in bands. I just growing up, I used to sing along to things and daydream, but I never, you know, the Tri-Cities had great punk rock, you know, like, but there wasn't like music that I would sing, you know, it's a small Tri-Cities. It's small at the time, you know, maybe later you do a cover band, but it was like, there was nothing there that would make me go like, yeah, I'm going to start a band. And so when I was in Seattle, there's obviously a scene.
Yeah.
It was very evident, right? You just saw it everywhere. So I just thought at the time, I was like, well, why don't we try that?
Yeah.
Like seems like you could possibly do that. And I answered one ad in the Rocket, which Dave and James had put together. And I forced them to let me come and try out because they were like, do you have a cassette? Do you have you, you know, who do you sound like?
Yeah.
Do you have any
who's
recordings
your manager?
Of yourself?
I'm just kidding.
Who's your, yeah. And I was like, I don't have any of that. I was like, you're just going to have to hear me sing.
Yeah.
And so I went out to what was then like Greenwood, which then was like no man's land.
Yeah.
Out to some house they had and met them. And they, I swear I started and sort of live by this trial by fire thing, you know, where they were like, okay, well, we've written some songs and we're going to go into the practice space. You come in and start singing. I mean, I've never been in a band. And so I walked in, it was just drums and bass.
Yeah.
So I went in and I was like, okay. And, you know, and then never looked back.
And you know, and you're still not looking back. You have new music on the way you're working on, and mm-hmm. that's awesome. So as far as like your musical, like your love and passion for it, you know, like what was the first band or musician or artist, you know, even as a kid that kind of like, you know, inspired you?
I really loved like Carole King. Like okay. my mom had the Tapestry record, which is a phenomenal record. You know, I sort of started listening to, you know, I think my first records were like Olivia Newton-John, right? Mm-hmm. And the Bee Gees or something.
ABBA?
No, we didn't have ABBA. We okay. didn't. My okay. mom, they okay. would listen to like Cher, Barbara Streisand, Carole King. Who else? There weren't that many. Elton John. Mm-hmm. So those would be kind of the first ones, you know, on 8-track, no less.
So they weren't hard rockers.
No, not really. Like I've never been super metal or anything
sure,
like that,
sure, sure.
which used to be kind of the running joke, not the running joke, but in my mind when Hammerbox was going or even in Seattle, I was like, I'm a new wave baby.
Yeah.
Like I like Susie and the Banshees or the Cocteau Twins or,
yeah.
you know, even like Kate Bush or all of that stuff. So I didn't grow up like in love with the Stones
yeah.
or Dylan or anybody, you know what I mean? So, but I'm surrounded by guys who that's what they live and die by, sure. you know, Led Zeppelin. And so I always thought that was really funny, but growing up, like I listened to, I mean, I'm a singer at heart. And so I like listening to singers of all mm-hmm. kinds that I like any, you know, and I have an appreciation for voices and somewhat technique. Like I used to sing along to Barbara Streisand for reasons, not to sound like her, but she has such an incredible tone.
Yeah.
And she could hold a note. And just like guitar players, when you sing along with someone just to see what you can do, or if you can get the same tone, hold a note, or it's a great way to practice and figure out what you can do. I did that for years.
Awesome. You know.
Alone in your room.
Yes, exactly. So with this interview, we're actually going to play some songs from Carrie's band throughout the year. So we're actually going to play a song from the band that we were just talking about, Hammerbox. So, you know, I feel like now is a good time to probably just jump into it. So this is When Three is Two. Is there anything you could say to jump into this song? Anything you could say to introduce it?
Well, this was one of our favorite songs. I think it's, you know, it's one of the ones that a lot of people know. Dave wrote the lyrics for it and the band, the music. I don't know. It was one of our favorite songs. And it came in two different versions. So I'm not sure which one you'll play. It either had a soft opening or a hard one.
Which one do you prefer?
We shall see. I kind of like the soft one.
Let's do the soft mm-hmm. one. All right. Here it is, When Three is Two by Hammerbox. We're talking with Carrie Aukrey. It's Loud and Local on The Rock.
When the world takes a bite, left only in the blur of the last night, then and now don't make much sense. Twisted swords are the only evidence. I couldn't ask for more. So as the haze clears away, I can remember the place but not the face. Nothing so close, and when I'm so close to nothing, but that's how things go.
When Three Is Two by Hammerbox, from Kerry Aukry and Hammerbox, and that band, very influential in the Northwest scene. And after Hammerbox, you went on to join a band called Goodness. Can you tell me a little bit about the transition from Hammerbox to Goodness, and you know what kind of brought you into the new project? Well, not new now, but you know, looking back, what brought you to Goodness after Hammerbox?
Well, you know, it's, I find that time amazing, like in your 20s, like the risks you're willing to take, you know, you just don't, it's an, in some ways you don't know any better, but you also think you have all the time. And I just appreciate that. But Hammerbox had been signed to A&M Records, which I think for a lot of bands brings a lot of pressure, and that either goes well or it doesn't. And I think it became too much for band members. And at some point, we had a 2-record guarantee deal, which was crazy. And
people aren't getting that these days.
No, no, not at all. And I walked, like, I, at some point it just was in a place that wasn't. James had left, and it, I think at that young age, I didn't have the skills or, and you know, like to talk it out or, I don't know. You just didn't have like the knowledge enough to do it. So you just, you know, do the wild thing and be like, this isn't working for me. And you walk out, you know, people were not happy. Managers and lawyers were not happy, but I just, it didn't cross my mind that I just wouldn't start another band. And I was looking to grow. So in Hammerbox, I wrote the melodies and lyrics. Yeah. I didn't write the music, like the songs. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to start writing songs. And so in my mind, I wanted to gather new musicians and try something different, something that had a little more space for vocals, a band where I could write some of the songs, and exercise that. So that's what I had in mind. And again, Seattle was just burgeoning with musicians everywhere. So it just didn't cross my mind. And, you know, at the time, Seattle was very, very livable, accessible. Like, you just, all your friends were musicians. Yeah. And so it was like, great, I've played with these guys. Now, you know, I'm going to go meet with my friend Timo and talk about music. And he knows Danny. And, you know, Timo knows Garth because they played Nubbin together. And my brother was the first drummer. And Mary Ellen Cooley knew like the Fastbacks. And she was like, I'll play bass for a while. You know what I mean? And then we swapped out my brother. My brother left to be in Citizens Utilities. And this is a funny story. Danny wanted Chris Friel to come try out. And I remember him saying that. And I remember the Friel brothers from a coffee shop on the Ave when I was in college. And instantly I was like, and I thought of them as pretty boys. Like, you know, they had their long hair, they're handsome guys. And I was like, so Danny says something about Chris Friel. And I go, oh, hell no. My first reaction was like, no way am I having some pretty boy in the band. I had such a visceral reaction, like, no.
Yeah.
And Danny convinced me. He's like, no, just, he's, you know, he's not like that. Let him try out. And this is one of my favorite stories. So Chris comes, he's obviously really nice. We start playing one of the songs and he's like staring at me. And I was started getting uncomfortable. Like, what is he looking at? You know what I mean? And this just shows some of my inexperience. So in Hammerbox, we would kind of be in separate corners. And if you were mad at somebody, you just didn't look at them, or you put a pole in the way, you know what I mean? So there was a lot of like separation. So I wasn't used to like people looking at me or towards me. And so at one point I said to Chris, what are you looking at? And he goes, I'm waiting for you to tell me what to do. And instantly I fell in love with Chris Friel, because I was like, he just schooled me in the best way. Yeah. Like, he just taught me something. And I grew right in that moment. And I really, really appreciated that. Like, I had deep respect for that. And I was like, oh, okay, I love you. All right, you're in. Thank you for that.
He's just here to play. And, you know, he's not he's not here to beef with you. He's here to just go along with it and join the party.
Chris Friel is one of the most even keel, kind people I've ever met in my life. I can't even count on one hand ever, really. I've ever seen him be terrible. Never. Yeah. Never. Yeah.
Awesome.
Lucky me.
So, you know, of all of the, you know, the shows that Hammerbox and Goodness got to play, what were some of the venues that you really enjoyed back in the day? Maybe venues that aren't still here, whether it be the Velvet Elvis or, you know, Rock Candy, something that, you know, what were some of your favorite, you know, stomping grounds for your bands?
Well, some of my all-time favorites were the OK Hotel.
Okay.
For sure.
Well, Hammerbox, that's funny. Like, I just say OK.
Okay. I know. Right. Yeah. Cha-ching. We really cut our teeth there. Rock Candy was also one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah.
Probably one of our best shows we ever played, with like, I think the Gits and 7 Year Bitch at Rock Candy was one of my, it's actually out there on YouTube, but I loved Rock Candy. I mean, we played everywhere. You name it. We played there, like, you know, the Vogue or what was the Off Ramp at the time, or you played a lot, but those two places were probably some of my favorite. We got to play them more. That there's nothing wrong with that either. Yeah. But in terms of clubs, those are my favorite. For Goodness, also I guess for Hammerbox and Goodness was the Crocodile, the old Crocodile. I swear to God, I spent my 20s in there. And it was just a great place to play. And, you know, we've also gotten to play with amazing people, or open for them even, which has been great.
So you mentioning the Gits, you know, and also 7 Year Bitch, like such iconic, you know, female centric energy and badass, just women singing. I love it. Honestly, the Gits, one of my favorite bands of all time. I never got to see them. It was before my time of going to shows. And if it's not too sensitive of a subject, obviously Mia passed away, was brutally murdered and everything. And, you know, you can look up that story. So much about that, if you're unfamiliar. But when I say Mia's name, do you have any memories? Is there anything positive, like, you know, spending time with her? Anything you wouldn't mind sharing?
Well, nothing but positive about Mia. I mean, she was a very kind soul with an incredible voice. And I didn't know her super well, but we were all in the same scene, so you sort of felt like you were together.
Yeah.
I distinctly remember, And this happened so rarely. I think to this day, I love this conversation. It doesn't happen very often. We were both playing in Alaska, like in Anchorage. Yes.
Cool. Yeah,
Anchorage used to fly people up all the time.
Hell yeah.
And Hammerbox and the Gits played a show up there together. And Mia pulled me aside and wanted to talk about voice. She was like, okay, how do you keep your voice, you know, from not, you know, getting hurt? How do you, do different things with your voice. Like, I just was so excited. One, because she's an incredible singer and I love talking to singers. Yeah. And people don't, for whatever reason, don't usually talk to each other. And so I just felt so excited about that. I'll never forget that. It's so rare that, and she was such an incredible, you know, singer and person. I was giddy. pretty giddy. Yeah.
Giddy for the gits. You know, get it?
Giddy for the gits. Well, and just also incredible people, that whole band. Just kind souls. You know what I mean? And, you know, when she was murdered, that was, that I believe it really cracked our 20s. Also Stephanie from 7 Year Bitch, mm-hmm. when she passed, there was just like this, I don't know, like section of time, like mid 20, you know, your 20s basically, where you just did experience people passing, you know. It's like there was Stephanie, there was Mia, and then there was other people around us, like, you know, just heroin in general. And prior to us, you know, you think about Andy Woods and all that too. But in your 20s, it just cracks you open a little bit. Things aren't as sweet afterwards. You're not everyone's happy go lucky, like nothing's going to go wrong.
Yeah.
It really, it marks you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to bring the vibe down. Obviously you can look up live videos of the gits and so much energy in those albums. So just wanted to make sure we mentioned that, cause you mentioned those names. And so I wanted to, you know, kind of just chat about that. So, you know, when you look back, with Goodness and with Hammerbox, for your personal taste these days, which one do you think you would put on? Which album would you put on for yourself? Or is that like picking a child? Is that a rude?
That's
question
really hard.
Ask?
Yeah, that is really hard. Yeah,
we can
that's
skip
really
that
hard.
Question. We can skip that question.
I mean, if I was going to pick one from each, I really love Numb. I really do. Just we had a chance to do like larger production, and there's the, you know, that mood and that kind of that music does one thing, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you really need that. And then Goodness's first record, I love, because it was, for me, I know it was a moment of experimentation that was very pleasurable, like kind of thought out, or just actively sought, you know what I mean? Like everyone was very, let's try and do something different without being manipulative, right? Or, you know, obvious or something. So I would say, you know, from Hammerbox, that one, and then the first Goodness record, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry to make you choose your kids, but the other ones die. we massacre them now. Okay. So, obviously, there was, you know, kind of the elephant in the room here is the pandemic, you know, like there was like this year and a half where shows weren't happening, you know, and how did you stay sane personally? Or did you not?
I did. I got to tell you, I was one of those people who was probably gunning for alone time.
Sure.
And so, you know, I really welcomed it. I mean, I'm lucky that I didn't have anybody close to me get ill or pass. And so I really took, I swear, that first year to just do a lot of contemplation and healing and meditation.
Yeah.
And I wanted it. Like, I just was like, I'm going to go deep and, take a look at some things, that maybe I haven't, or look to heal some things. So for me, it was like I welcomed it. And I think I'm also really good at that. I don't know. I don't mind spending a lot of time alone.
Sure.
And so it didn't hit me hard right away. But I would say now feels weirder than then, even, you know, because we're sort of half in, half out,
Half in,
but there's no media around it. So you don't really know what's going on. Like, it just feels like when it started, that's all that was on the news.
Yep.
Understandably. Right. And it was just like almost for 2 years, just like nonstop, the management or looking at it everywhere. And at some point it just felt like there was this.
We're just living with it somehow. Yeah,
there's more. Yeah. Once I think the vaccine came out, now it's like more people than I have ever known have had COVID now, but you never hear about it. Like, it's not on the news.
Yeah.
And but they're vaccinated, so they're not, you know, passing. But I was like, how did we go from this to like, now I don't know if I ever hear about it. It's just, and we're not all, going out. Not everybody's feeling so good. Yeah. I mean, you put 2 years in isolation, you don't necessarily step out going, great, you know, like, I'm used to this. It's like you have to have reentry. And, you know, during that time, that affected a lot of musicians.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, for active musicians, to take away shows or have to pivot, I thought actually, a lot of people I know were really impressive and innovative. So even that, I loved watching that, but that was not easy. And I don't think that filled the void per se, but I really appreciate how innovative people were. They're like, well, I got to do something. Like this is what I do. And you know, now it's kind of a whole new world because of that. You could still use that if you want. Yeah. And so I think that brings good new knowledge, but massively difficult, especially for people who like pay their rent or make money at it. What a wild thing to just have that rug pulled out from under you completely and halt. I didn't feel it as hard because that's not where I'm at, but I definitely watched a lot of friends go, ooh, now what? What am I going to do? So,
well, it's good that you're back playing shows. You know, you just recently played a show and then you have one coming up in October. It's got to be kind of nice to get back to it.
Yeah. Well, and that show I just played literally got postponed like from a year out.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, like when we first started to go out, it was so like, okay. And then no way.
Yeah.
You know, we were COVID's just gone. Too close.
Yeah.
No, wait, you know, like,
oh, wait.
Oh. Exactly. So like that show I played had been pushed out like almost a year. Like it'd been on the books and we just kept having to push it out and push it out. It was supposed to be August of last year. And I just didn't, at that time, we were so close to like still being in it. That for me, what a different thing to have to think about. But I was like, I did not want to be the person gathering people.
You didn't want to be a super spreader, Carrie.
No, I didn't want to be the reason people were gathering. Sure. I didn't want to put musicians at risk. I was like, that's not the kind of environment I want to play a show in. I can wait. You know,
you hear about that Carrie show? Yeah, she was a super spreader, dude. I can't believe her. I'm just kidding.
I almost got ill at your show.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I totally hear you. Okay, so we're gonna go into a goodness song here, actually, to play a song. But before I do, I have a question that, you know, just kind of, and you can interpret this in any way you'd like. But being someone, you know, that's been in the Northwest since the '80s, or been in Seattle since the '80s in the Seattle music scene, and you know, been a part of such pivotal bands and in during, you know, such a crazy landscape of this city, and still putting out music, and you know, continuing to play live shows. How has living in Seattle and living in the Northwest affected the way you approach your art?
Well, I feel like I was lucky enough to navigate Seattle when it was very livable and affordable. So I'll say that first. Like, I cut my teeth on music and art at a time where a lot of us could live and do art and hang out with each other and play shows and build. Also at a time pre-internet. So your energy was put into like building shows, you know, with each other, with audiences. And, you know, at the time, like Seattle, what I would say a huge spectrum of people were using music as their outlet. If, you know, albeit if they were like playing it or going to see it, anywhere from the Microsoft guy to a suburb person to somebody from Bellingham to like the rock and roller, like everyone was going to see music or play music every weekend. And so you could play a show on a Monday and it'd be packed. Four shows could be packed on a Monday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I will say, like, I got to do a lot of things. I got to very in a healthy manner be DIY.
Yeah.
I got to spend and commune with a lot of friends who were all doing the same thing. Like, that was our life. It's like a little village, right? And we all get to hang out and utilize the city. And, you know, Seattle at the time, and you know, 7 o'clock at night, it was like a ghost town. Like, you could walk downtown and, you know, there might be a couple blocks that were like, okay, you know, maybe not walk through there, but it was a ghost town. So you felt like as a person, you could walk and live the city and use it and hang out in it. And I feel like I'm lucky that I got to live it that way. I feel like I got the chance to do a lot of things, to learn a lot of things, and participate and meet people, like so many things, because it was really viable. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's all I did for solidly for almost 20 years. And so you learn a lot in that. So I feel like that's what my experience sort of entails. Yeah. And it's provided me that all the experience and all the music.
That's awesome.
It's very different now. You know what I mean? I feel like it's very different now. I was laughing because, you know, that's not that long ago. That's not that long ago that we like didn't have the, you know, like we didn't have like mass internet usage. And I found notebooks that Hammerbox used to bring on tour and capture people's addresses, like handwritten.
Yeah.
And that's how we like got a, you know, like a mailing list. A mailing list was this. It wasn't email addresses. It was like literally people writing down their addresses. And your problem was, God, I hope it's legible.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's so weird. It seems weird to me.
Snail mail them a sticker or something, right?
Yeah. People come out though. I mean, I don't know. I feel like at the time people sought things out because you had to. You know, and now it's so readily available. I think that's changed the landscape or how people like engage with music, go to shows, don't go to shows. I mean, you can, I don't know. I think it's really affected live shows in some ways. I mean, there's people who appreciate live shows, but now you've got a lot of different options that you could get really comfortable with, you know?
Definitely true. Shout out to the people that are still coming out to shows supporting music, and shout out to the musicians that are living in Seattle, booking shows with four different jobs and, you know, fitting it in to live in Seattle, you know, paying four times the cost of what it should to get a rental or get a practice space, you know? So shout out to those people, you know, so.
Absolutely. Yeah. How's that even being done?
Somehow.
Yeah.
You know.
They will persevere.
Exactly. So we're going to go into a goodness song, and this one's super wise. Anything you want to say about this one?
You know, it was so fun playing this song. That, you know, the starting riff, if you know it, you'll recognize it. It's super catchy. It's been played at hockey games. It's been like, it's an opening song for anything. And it's always a really good time playing it. It's really fun.
All right. Here's goodness. We're talking with Kerry Aukery here on Loud and Local.
Yeah.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you
what
know why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow, it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Super Wise by Goodness here on Loud and Local, and we're talking with Carrie Aukrey. She is a solo musician these days, and she's going to be playing a showcase October 21st at the newly revamped Crocodile. If you have not had a chance to go to the Crocodile, I highly suggest it. Beautiful space. There's like two different venues. There's a hotel. So if you get too many drinks, you can go upstairs. You can spend the night. It's a great place. Great. You know, people put out. Have you been to the Crocodile since it's reopened?
I haven't. Ooh, awesome. That show's actually August 21st.
August 21st. Sorry.
August 21st. No worries.
I will say, let me say, August 21st, and then I'm just going to take that little piece and I'm going to, you know, cut and paste it into, you know, previous.
Amazing.
So August 21st at the Crocodile, still in the summer, technically. So you are currently in the process of working on new music. Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, if this is going to be an EP, an album, or a full length, or if you're just kind of going with the flow?
I really like being able to do singles.
Yeah.
So there's a single that I'm going to complete by the end of July and release with a video. And Danny's going to take it to a company that is doing NFTs and create avatars and like use it on that platform. So that's kind of wild. And so, you know, doing singles, like you get to experiment some more, you know what I mean? Like you can play with a lot of people. One of the songs I want to do, have Jeff Fielder produce, another songs with, a friend of mine, Hunter Leah, who's here as a producer.
Awesome.
And so, yeah, it's been really fun doing singles. The latest songs really, I think that have just kind of come out of me are like, I think women in general really relate to them. There's just a lot of messaging. I mean, anybody could, but women will recognize sort of ideas and phrases. It's like little stories about around boundaries, you know what I mean? Or experiences you've had. And there's kind of cliches that happen to everybody. Sure. And so if there's a phrase that says, oh yeah. And the song I want to record is called The Knowing. And it's all kind of phrases I believe women have heard, like you're too much, you know what I mean? Like calm down, you know, feeling like, there's a lot of lines that are about like, you don't have to ask for permission. Like how you feel is not up for debate. You know what I mean? And so I don't know, maybe at this age, I'm just having a lot of those boundary lessons and learning how to like be much more vocal decidedly than maybe ever before, which is crazy that it's taken me so long. But
sounds like the world has gaslit you for life.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't know. It's just come up and I've thought about it. I think, you know, like I said, as I tend to, you know, deep dive into things, I like to change. I like to grow or whatever. So I have friends who've always like, Carrie, not everybody wants to go that deep. And I was like, why not?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So yeah, I'm excited about that. It'll be fun.
Awesome. Cool. Well, again, August 21st, not October, August 21st at the Crocodile. So I'm going to ask you a very difficult question. And you don't have to hammer it down to one or two. It can be five or six. It doesn't matter. When you think of all-time favorite Northwest bands, what are some of your favorite Northwest bands? And it could be bands that, you know, are underrated. It could be bands as big as Heart. You know, it's just when you think of Northwest bands, what are your favorites?
Number one, Lucky Me.
Okay.
I love that band. Underrated.
Underrated, I've never heard of them.
Oh, go find them. Nylene is an amazing lead singer, but that band is phenomenal. It's filled with amazing people. Yeah. All right. I would say Lucky Me. Deja Culentano or the Pinups. They made an incredible record that's out there. Nirvana, I have to say, like,
yeah.
I'm not a bandwagon person, but I remember the first time I saw them, I go, oh God, that's going to be huge.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But I loved the music. I was like, for reasons, that's why, you know, I yeah. said it. I love them a lot. I like the Gits. Yeah. I loved Kim Virant. I mean, there's so many people, right? Like,
yeah.
Do you remember Kristen Berry at all? Oh. She did a little more, techno stuff. I know I'm going to forget people, so that's what's going to be terrible. But Lucky Me stands out number one every time.
Okay.
I love, love, love them. Go find them. Desperately search for them.
Awesome. Maybe we'll play some of them here on La Moco when I find it.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah. You'll love it. I think you'll love it.
So, you know, now that, you know, you have, you know, this platform here, KISW, Loud Moco, I was curious, before we let you go and we play one of your solo songs, you know, is there any like local nonprofits, charities, companies, or anything that you'd like to shout out? Any causes, any, you know, local friends, companies, anything, you know, just while you have this platform, I'd like to, you know, let you speak whatever you'd like.
I'd like to give a shout out to my friend Pete Greenberg. He has Latent Print Records. He's a uber supporter of music in general, bands. Yeah. I love that. You know, I'll have to say, like, supporting causes for women with Roe v. Wade being reversed, yeah. if that's helping women get what they need, right? If should they need it. So any of those causes, that's probably at my forefront right now, just given the times, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm learning like who is effective to help contribute to. And so I'll send you some of those if you want to mention them, because I'm still learning about them. But I also like local things too, like anything that has outreach with homeless kids,
yeah.
Shelters, women who are escaping abuse or violence, anything. Mary's Place is amazing. Yeah. The Treehouse is amazing in the Central District. I also just think anything you can do to help like kids in the foster care system,
mm-hmm.
you know, Big Brother, any Big Brother programs, things like that. Like, I think that there are already existing people out there who deserve help and care or who are in troubled spots. And that would be a large group of the people that I think about.
Oh, awesome. Well, thank you very much for your spreading that knowledge, for getting that out there. And I have an idea. What if we do a CZ Records documentary? Wouldn't that be pretty cool? Think about all the albums that were on that record label.
No kidding. I'm sure Daniel would love that. He would.
All right.
That would be
new
amazing
project
collection.
For you. I'm just kidding.
Okay. I'll get it. Well, you know what? I bet Pete Greenberg will be all over that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Shout out to Pete. He sent me some good stuff. He saw I retweeted something. He sent me a package with some goodness and some Haribo stickers. So Pete rocks.
He does.
But, yeah. So again, August 21st at the Crocodile. Any final words before we jump in? Actually, you know what? Let's intro this or chat a little bit about this. So we're actually going to play What I Want, which is the newest song from you that we'll be playing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this and, you know, what it appeared on? Was it a single or?
No, it was on my last record, which is called Passage.
Awesome.
And it's out there. It's the last song on the record. And it's just a hopeful, like, fight for your hope kind of song. And just the sound of it, like, the end always... I like to fight for people. You know what I mean? Fight. Yeah. And I find that this song is about that, but also kind of fighting for myself. And I think a lot of people can relate to that.
All right. Fight for yourself. I like it. So it's What I Want. And you can get this on her newest album. She's going to be releasing some new singles. And then if you want to hear this live, you can go August 21st at the Crocodile. Carrie Aukery, thank you. It's been a pleasure. And I hope to see you at the show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. stool in the air. I cover my eyes. Release everything, everything I got. With a fist in the air, shake like I don't care, no matter what they say.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.